I am joined in this studio by Dawn Schlosser. She has written a book, The Holy Grail of Gluten-Free. She's here to tell us more about a gluten-free life and her new cookbook. Good morning to you, Dawn, and thanks so much for being here.
Good morning, Maria. Thanks a lot.
And you, am I correct, you decided to write this because you and I believe a member or two of your family have celiac disease?
That's correct. I was diagnosed with celiac disease about 5.5 years ago, and at almost the same time as my young daughter. She was under 2 at the time, so it was a pretty big transition. And we've since found out that we believe my mother has the same condition.
And can you explain what celiac disease is?
Sure, absolutely. Celiac disease is a genetic autoimmune disorder that essentially means that there's a genetic component to inheriting it, and that my immune system, when exposed to the gluten proteins, allergenic proteins, if I inhale and swallow them or if I in any way ingest them, my immune system will attack my intestines and now some of my other organs as well. I have a hypothyroid disease that's associated.
And I imagine it's pretty hard in this packaged world to stay away from things that might affect you.
It is. It's terribly difficult, partly because the American diet these days is comprised of creatively repackaged corn, soy, and wheat. And wheat is the major offender in my diet. There are also hidden sources of barley and rye and other similar grains that also affect celiacs and other people with allergies to those allergenic proteins. But the main offender is wheat because it's in darn near everything in one form or another.
Mm-hmm. And there, it seems that there are trends as well where people get all, I'm going to go gluten-free. Now, for you, it is definitely a medical concern, but a lot of people
right.
say, I'm going to go gluten-free. Is it necessary for everyone?
I don't think so. I think that a lot of us have problems digesting the current level of wheat, partly because it's been modified and modified and modified down to the point where our current wheat isn't something that our ancestors ate, and we're inundated with it. It's just it's a dosage question. If all of us who don't have sensitivities at least ate it in moderation, I don't think that there would be the widespread problem that there is. But it's true that celiac disease and allergies and intolerances are on the rise, and I think it's just that we're over inundated with these simplified, modified grains.
So for you, you have to stay free of gluten. What can you eat? I mean, are there certain grains that you can eat, or what do you have to avoid, I guess, and what can you have?
Absolutely. There are a lot of pseudo-cereals, which are not quite grains, but in a similar family, like buckwheat is a pseudo-cereal, that I can eat, and it performs very well in the kitchen if you know how to treat it. I can eat millet. Gluten-free oat, provided that it's not grown in crop rotation or too near wheat fields. Amaranth. Some celiacs can eat quinoa. I react to it personally. And that seems to be an interesting mark of the disease, is some of us react as if we're ingesting an allergenic protein in the wheat family, even when we eat some other things. Some of us react to corn. Some of us react to quinoa. Some of us react to oats. It's strange that it can be so individual, but it's just the way that the immune system develops.
And not to get overly personal or have too many details, but
right,
what does
right.
it do to you? Like, is it a digestive issue? Do you have trouble breathing, functioning? Like, what side effects does it have?
It can present slightly differently for each individual celiac. And yes, it may border on TMI from the radio. But when the immune system launches an attack, I will immediately inflate like a balloon. And there will be a lot of pain and discomfort and things you don't want to hear about on the radio digestively. But also, one of the most interesting things is that it affects me neurologically. I have memory issues, language problems, depression, and anger. They're all associated.
And actually, that's kind of a good point, because maybe there's a parent out there who their child is reacting to something like this, and they see behavior problems, but it might be an allergy.
That is actually one of the most common things that resolves when people who are sensitive remove gluten grains from the diet. Behavioral issues improve. My son has a similar situation. He just doesn't break down if he doesn't have gluten and dairy in his diet.
And how is it diagnosed?
It's so complicated and convoluted. It really is. It really is.
It's not just a blood test or something.
Well, there is a blood test. There is a blood test, and it's improved. But when I was being diagnosed, it was a bit shaky. the specific immunological components that they were testing for were a little bit shaky. They had to be in certain number for them to diagnose a reaction. And if you've been avoiding or reducing your gluten grains, even subconsciously because you're having problems with them, then it can take your immune reaction down several notches and you can test negative. So it's a little bit complicated. Some people go on to have an intestinal biopsy where they take multiple samples of the villi in the intestines to see whether or not they've been damaged by that onslaught of the immune system. But even that is a little bit sketchy because the damage can be patchy. It may concentrate in one specific area of the intestine. And since it's such a long organ, if you don't manage to sample that patch, you can also get a false negative diagnosis.
So it's sounds very complex.
It is a little.
Yeah. And so you decided to write a cookbook. Is that because you weren't finding things you wanted or somebody advised, hey, you make this great stuff, let's do a cookbook? Like what inspired you to do a cookbook?
I wish it was just compliments to my cooking, but no. Gluten-free foods are generally tragically poor in texture, if not flavor. And I went through about a year of full-on frustration attempting to find good commercial foods and then attempting to find decent recipes that were written, and I just pretty much struck out. So I finally went a little bit crazy getting ready for my son's birthday, the second one after we'd gone gluten-free, feeling like I was a terrible mom because I couldn't serve anything that anyone would want to eat, and started throwing things together in the kitchen. And somehow, I don't know, but somehow that morning, what I threw in the pan and into the oven worked, and it was good, and it was the first really amazing gluten-free thing I had ever eaten. So I decided I had to do more.
And so all of these are original recipes?
Every single one.
And looking at the cover, it's a very attractive cover, and it's the holy grail of gluten-free, and we have a little grail there with gluten-free items in it, and it says on it, dairy-free, yeast-free, rice-free, bean-free, almost entirely soy-free. And a lot of people do seem to have reactions to those too, sometimes dairy or
yes.
soy or whatever it may be.
Dairy is an incredibly common thing to react to, especially for those of us with celiac disease, because the blunting of the villi actually, it's the tip of the villi that produces the lactase enzyme that helps us digest the sugars in milk. And so most of us are lactose intolerant, so that's a big deal. The other things, some of them are really just about texture and flavor. Bean-free, for example. Some people react to it, but not very many. But a lot of gluten-free bakers rely on bean flours when they get away from rice flour, because rice flour gives you a terrible texture. But bean flours, you can taste them. And it's just a little odd to have a cookie that tastes like chickpeas, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to get away from all of the flavor and the textural issues that come with the gluten-free diet and just have food that you can crave again, because that's what's missing.
And scanning through this, really nice photos nice layout to it. Looks straightforward. Now, I have to admit, this is the first time I've seen the book, so I haven't practiced any of the recipes, but they look pretty straightforward, not like too many ingredients or too much effort involved. So it doesn't look like you have to be a master cook to do these.
Absolutely not. In fact, that was one of the most important things to me when I wrote the book, was that everything came out very simply, was very easy to follow instruction-wise. I've changed the format of the recipe from a traditional format to actually include the ingredients exactly where they're used, so that no one has to get confused or reference different areas of the book. Or I've tried to put the cakes right next to their frosting so you don't get lost switching back and forth pages. I wanted it to be accessible because many people who find themselves going gluten-free and needing good food haven't cooked before. It's not something that they've had to do a lot of because we have such a prepackaged world around us these days. So I wanted it to be entirely accessible. It actually has a great first section, which includes information on all the ingredients that we use, especially since most people coming to the gluten-free world aren't familiar with all of the different grains that we use. And I needed to let people know where to find them, what they are, why we're eating them. And I thought that that was pretty important.
It looks like a lot of it is cookies and breads, things like that. You'd think more of dessert-wise, but it also looks like there are things that could be main meals.
Yeah. Well, essentially, when you go gluten-free, your meat is fine. You're going to keep eating the meat that you always ate. You may have to change which brand of sausages because yours might have an additive, but that's about it. So when it comes to the main courses and the vegetables, not much is going to change, but it's the breads, anything with a grain in it that you've got to alter. So it's got the breads and the pancakes and the muffins and the crusts and the wraps and the, of course, the cookies and the cakes.
And you mentioned that it's not necessarily using grains that you know, people think, I'll just use flour or whatever, but in this you need to use others. Are those easy to come by in the local grocery stores?
That is an excellent question. Actually, to get everything that I need for baking, I get a few things from A&P. I get a few things from Rain Country Nutrition, who is very good about getting lovely things in. And I have spoken with the manager of Safeway, and he is going to pull in a few other things for me to stock regularly, and I'm really, really grateful for the cooperation there. So I do have to cobble things together between the different island resources, but everyone is so great and so accommodating that I think that we can manage it.
It can be found. You may just have to go to several stores.
Absolutely.
Get a little bit here, a little bit there.
Right.
In order to do that. And this, I'm guessing it's self-published.
It is.
And you did a very, very nice job here. If people are interested in it, where would they be able to find it?
Well, aside from hunting me down, you can find me on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, any of the usual online resources.
Okay, and we're going to take a brief break here, and I'll be right back. Okay, and took that little break there because we had a phone call with an individual wanting to ask a question. This wasn't intended to be a call-in show, but what the heck? We'll play it by ear, and Don is game to take questions. So Chris joins us. Good morning, Chris. What is your question?
Hi, good morning. I had the opportunity to try some of your gluten-free cookies this summer at the
Farmer's Market
downtown.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't believe it was gluten-free. I said, are you sure? Because it was so good, and the texture was really good, and it was very chocolatey, and I'm relieved that chocolate is permitted on your gluten-free diet, and it's probably covered extensively in your book, which I need to get a copy of. So I'm glad you mentioned that. It's on Amazon. Don, what do you do when you get to substitutions? It's not common that I bake, but occasionally I do, and sometimes we don't have something. I'll be looking around for, I don't know, something. My wife will say, oh, you can use like a half a cup of yogurt for that. That's the same thing. And I'm totally blown away. No, you can't use a half a cup of yogurt. It says you need this, and she says you can use that. And do you have a page that covers substitutions or anything like that?
I don't have a page in the book that covers specific substitutions. I do have on a blog, a terrible blog that I have online, but it exists, a variety of substitutions for the things called for in the book if one needs to substitute them for dietary reasons. There are some simple substitutions that people who are new to the gluten-free world can rely on pretty easily. If you're using flour as a thickener, for example, to make gravy, soups, things like that, arrowroot starch is a brilliant substitution. You can pretty much substitute it one-to-one, and you can use that for cornstarch as well if you have a corn sensitivity. And then arrowroot starch blended with one of the other flours, sorghum or corn flour particularly, is great for using to batter for frying. But as far as other simple substitutions, it's when you get into baking, it's simply not simple.
Almond flour, is that something you can use with gluten-free?
Absolutely. I actually call for it into many of the recipes in my book, and it's a brilliant thing. Not only is it lower in carbohydrate and higher in nutrients than most other flours, but it gives a great moisture and a buttery sort of texture, and you don't miss the dairy when you add the almond flour in. It's brilliant.
Excellent. All right, thank you. I'll take my other answers off the air.
Okay, thanks very much, Chris.
Thanks a lot.
And so again, if people are interested in this book, where did you say it's, is it available locally or you have to get it
online?
It is online,
available
or?
Locally. I think we've still got a few down at Parnassus. She's been carrying it for me, which is great. I'm really grateful for that. And then you can find it on Amazon.com, the usual BarnesandNoble.com, or you can hunt me down.
Okay. And you were at the farmer's market selling them as well as selling your
baked goods. Absolutely. And they were very well received, even by people who don't adhere to the diet. I had plenty of curiosity seekers that were very pleasantly surprised.
Okay. And I should say, we're not supposed to eat in the air room, but Dawn has brought some stuff here.
Mocha
and I'm thinking she's wanting me to try something. So what do you have here?
There's a mocha chip cookie right there. And then
it's
very
chocolatey.
Side, I have some pumpkin bread.
Okay. So we'll give the, here I will crunch. Oh, it's very soft.
Mm-hmm. It's meant to be a moist cookie.
Trying not to chew too much on there. Very good. A nice texture. Nice chocolatey flavor. Crispy on the outside and chewy on the inside.
That was the idea.
So a question about chocolate. Doesn't chocolate have dairy in it? Or what do you use for your chocolate?
Well, it depends on the variety of chocolate. For the chocolate chips in this, I use an amazing brand called Enjoy Life chocolate chips. They're these nice little mini chips, and you can get them down at Rain Country Nutrition, and they're lovely. I've worked with them for almost all my recipes, and I think I prefer them over most others.
What is it? Are they don't have milk in that? What do they?
No, they don't.
How odd. What gives them their creaminess?
I assume that it's the addition of fat.
Some kind of fat that's not.
Well, cocoa butter. Cocoa butter is not a dairy. It's actually the fat from the cocoa beans.
Interesting.
And a little
these are addictive, may I say. Now, after I've had one, it's like, man, I could have more. Okay, and then this other one you have, it's a pumpkin bread. Is that what you said?
Yes. That's sort of a preview recipe. I'm working on a new book for holiday 2015 that will be the Holy Grail of Gluten-Free Holidays. Holiday baking, some summer recipes. That, I have to say, has been in the fridge for about a week.
Oh, okay. No, it's still good. It's I know my spices. Cloves?
Yes. There's definitely clove.
Nutmeg? Mm. Something. And it's, what kind of flour, if you call it that, do you use for this? It's very, smooth is the right word, but you know, it's not a heavy cake.
It's actually largely buckwheat. Buckwheat is an amazing grain, well, pseudo grain, but if you treat it right, if you know to add a little bit of an acidic as a dough conditioner, and to not use it too heavily when there's nothing else to blend with the flavor of it, it can be brilliant. It comes up springy and soft. It's really great stuff.
Okay, and again, at the beginning of this book, you have a nice little layout explaining all the different ingredients, get a sense of what equipment you might need in order to take care of all this. Again, very well put together. Everything is pretty much on a single page. So you just have a one page with a lovely picture that goes, I can make that. No. And then at the back, I see this chart.
Yes, there are a couple of charts in the back. First, you'll find a weight chart. So if you need to substitute items and you're using a scale, which I do because it's so expedient and it is so accurate, easily accurate, you can substitute whatever you need with the correct weight right there. And then there's also an allergen chart in the back. If you have other sensitivities, it goes through many of the major things that we celiacs and other people with the digestive issues have sensitivities to. It tells you which recipes call for those, which recipes there's a simple substitution to take that out of.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to explain this chart. So on the allergen chart, like let's say I'm making the banana bread and I'm allergic to tree nuts.
Right.
What is this telling me?
This is telling you that that may not be the best recipe for you, or that you need to find a serious substitution, something that's a little bit more difficult to substitute. In this case, the banana bread calls for almond flour, which is why it's a hard thing to substitute. But if you can do cashews are a really great substitute for almonds. Some people aren't sensitive to them because they're a fruit.
Is there a cashew flour?
Yes, indeed.
Wow, there's everything out there I don't even know about. okay, so it looks, though, tree nuts are a biggie. I'm looking
at
the chart. Corn is a big item of difficult substitutions. But there are some recipes, whether you have those, you know, if you have those allergies, you have some options.
Right. Well, one note on the corn. The only reason that I've noted corn in there, because I don't actually call for a single corn ingredient, but most gluten-free recipes rely on the addition of something called xanthan gum, which essentially is a digestible glue. In its unglorified state, you can't call it much of anything but that. But what it does is bind things together because it's the gluten proteins that create those long protein strands and hold your baked goods together. And we don't have any of that in any of the grains that we use. We don't have any of that natural binding, so we have to add it. We add it through eggs. We add it by the addition of flax, and we add it by the addition of xanthan gum. Xanthan gum is, this is a little complicated, but it's extracted from the feeding of a specific bacterium on starch. And because it's pre-digested by that bacterium, you don't get essentially that starch left. But most good brands are fed on cornstarch. And that's why that's marked for corn.
Okay. And then,
complicated.
Well, yeah, no, but it makes sense. But in this, do you try to use, say, the most natural ingredients you can?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And xanthan, it does catch a lot of flack for being something that's produced in a laboratory situation, essentially. But it's not unlike many other natural cooking things that we do. It's akin to sourdoughing, mm-hmm. which is the feeding of specific bacterium and yeast with the flours. And it's a similar process that creates that.
Okay. All right. Really looks like a fabulous book. And again, enjoying your tasty treats you brought here. Anything else that you wanted to add?
Just that if you're having trouble and you're adjusting to a new gluten-free lifestyle, understand that everyone goes through a huge transition phase. The first year can be particularly daunting, but that there are resources out there. There are things that taste good and don't stink, and you don't have to settle. Look for better.
Okay. Thank you very much. Dawn Schlosser, her book, The Holy Grail of Gluten-Free, which is recipes that are dairy-free, yeast-free, rice-free, bean-free, and almost entirely soy-free, as she mentioned, available locally at Parnassus and also online at Amazon, and or track her down. Thank you so much for being here, Dawn.
Thanks a lot, Maria.